The Vietnam War, it's over.
Your job just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of Spycraft. Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
It's a good show!
In a world where every conversation is about what movie or TV show you've just seen, one comedian, doing his own voiceover for his own podcast due to monetary restrictions, got tired of pretending he's seen The Wire in conversations at parties. This is Never Seen It. Comedians rewriting famous movies and TV shows they've never seen. I'm Kyle Ayers.
Hey, this is Never Seen It. I am your host, Kyle Ayers. This is the podcast where I have comedians and friends and wonderful people rewrite famous movies and TV shows they've never seen, and we'll read them for you here in studio. In today's episode, we are doing a special Oscars edition of Never Seen It. So we have two of the Best Picture nominees rewritten by two folks here in studio with us. We have Todd Sklar.
Hello.
Hey, Todd. We also have Devin Walker.
Hey.
And we're joined by Alex Rennie.
Hello.
And so we are going to read through. We have scripts for Dunkirk and The Darkest Hour, and we will be getting through those here momentarily. But the first thing we want to do is we end every episode with a game called Guess What Movie My Dad Is Describing Based on Having Only Seen the Trailer and Never Having Heard of the Movie. I don't even know if I get the title right every time. I think it's different every time. And so we're going to play. So don't guess it just now, but we're going to play a little tease of my dad's voice memo. Here we go.
Okay, so there's a guy, and he's walking by the sun.
All right, I think that's enough. I think that's enough.
Wait, is it okay if he's doing Dunkirk? Because that's what we're doing. I feel like that sounds like Dunkirk.
I wouldn't have let him. Actually, Dunkirk's his favorite movie.
Really?
No, he's never seen it. We talk about this, but he hasn't been to a movie theater since Space Jam.
What?
That's the last time he went and saw a movie in movie theaters. Huh. And whether he thought it was a walk-off or he just got tired or something, he just falls asleep and he just doesn't care.
That's fair.
And so now
he hasn't missed much.
So let that one simmer. And so pretty much everything we talk about today is going to have Best Picture winners or Best Picture nominee theme. So what my dad is describing there is a Best Picture winner from years past. And
is it Road to Perdition?
No.
Okay.
And did that even win Best
Picture?
No,
it definitely didn't.
No. What if it was and I was wrong about it having won? That would have been one time he did Memento. And he was like, all right, so Brad Pitt's in a hotel. And everyone argued. And then someone was like, wait a second, is it Brad Pitt? And I was like, no, they're like, it's Memento. So we'll get back to that here at the end. But we wanna give everyone a treat. We're going to get right. The Oscars are Sunday. This Sunday, right? Isn't it this Sunday?
Yeah.
Next time it's Sunday. Unless you watch this, listen to this late, then you miss them. Mm-hmm. If they've already happened, then they already did. But they're on this Sunday, so we rewrote a couple of Best Picture nominees for you guys, and we're kind of hitting a nice chronological time period in the 20th century here.
Yeah.
And so we have Dunkirk, written by Todd Sklar.
Probably the best thing I've ever written, to be honest.
What are we basing off of, like two other things?
We're basically basing it off of me writing it and
writing all day, every day for 15 years.
Pretty high on coffee while doing it, yeah. That's pretty much it.
That's high praise. Yeah, someone who's job is to write.
Yeah, but sometimes, you know, you gotta start with what somebody else did and you build off of it. So really, I got to give credit to Christopher Nolan or whoever wrote Dunkirk.
Big shout out to Christopher Nolan.
Thanks, man.
Got to give credit where credit's
due.
You really have to. Chris, if you're out there listening, stick to it.
And, we believe in you, man.
The final page of your script, the end, that they call that the prestige.
Oh, yes.
There we go.
There he is.
That was an inception. You just got honest.
That's an inception.
Yes, Batman. Yeah, and then we're going to, after Dunkirk, have The Darkest Hour, which is called Darkest Hour, Dark as Hell, written by Devin Walker. And so we're going to get to those right now. And so we're going to start with Dunkirk, and Todd will be doing the stage directions.
Awesome. And should I announce the cast right now ahead of time?
You can, sure. If you want everyone to get completely confused immediately, I think we should announce the cast right now.
Just because I know, I shouldn't say I know because I haven't seen it, but I'm pretty sure there's a lot of characters in Dunkirk.
Mm-hmm.
Alex will be playing their narrator. Devin's going to be playing Soldier 1. Soldier 2 will be played by Kyle. Soldier 3, also played by Alex. Soldier 4, played by Devin. Soldier 5, Alex. Young Soldier, who is different from the previous five soldiers, will be played by Kyle. Then later, Kyle will be playing the captain. Devin will be playing his first mate. Alex will be the narrator again. And then I'm 90% sure that some of the movie takes place in the air. So Pilot 1 will be Kyle. Pilot 2 will be Alex. Pilot 3 will be Devin. And one of those guys, I think, is Tom Hardy. So if either of you have a Tom Hardy impersonation, that's a great time to do it.
Mm.
Or elsewhere, too. Then I think we're on a different boat later. So Sailor 1 will be Kyle. That boat's captain is Alex. Sailor 2 is Devin. And that is the cast of my Dunkirk.
All right.
I had two of mine wrong, so I'm glad you did a recap there.
Nice, nice. Cool.
So that then, still means you got 80% of yours right.
That's pretty good. Most movies don't do that. That's good.
Well, most movies aren't Dunkirk.
That's true.
What if that was the tagline to Dunkirk? Christopher Nolan's so cocky now. You know, most movies aren't Dunkirk.
That's a good tagline. Cool. Right. So then should I just get right into it?
We'll get right into it.
Dunkirk. All right. This is Dunkirk. Everybody get ready. Exterior, beach, day. Close on an old man in military garb looking out onto the ocean.
This is a movie about a man, an old man. His name? Dunkirk. And let me tell you, he is not happy about being on this beach. In fact, he's very pensive and brooding.
Close up on the old man's face as he looks pensive and brooding.
By the way, I'm your narrator, and it's entirely possible that at the end of this movie, it will be revealed that I am, in fact, Dunkirk.
But back to the old man. We pull wide to show that he's on the beach. He's surrounded by sailors and soldiers. They're all lined up, ready to either fight or escape. It's actually amazingly unclear which. The old man squints his eyes, focusing on the young men presumably under his command, all waiting to either die at war or escape death and go home. Cut to exterior beach, continuous, I think. A group of soldiers on the beach stand in formation and look out onto the ocean, pensive, brooding, poetic. It's honestly kind of incredible that we can't tell from their facial expressions or clothing or anything else on screen whether these men are about to start a war or just leaving one. But one of them turns to the others.
When are we going to fight?
I don't know, lad.
Oh, yeah, that's right. These motherfuckers are British. Soldier 3. Alex, that's you. It's war, guys.
When are we going home?
I don't know, lad.
Soldier 4.
What are we even doing on this beach?
Do you mean figuratively or literally?
A little column A, a little column B.
I don't know, lad.
Welcome to Dunkirk.
Just then, a young soldier walks by them, and we follow him, despite it not being a recognizable actor or there being any sort of character introduction or plot story motivation to justify following him. Welcome to Dunkirk, folks. The young soldier walks around the battle-trodden beach as loud bombs and bullets are overheard nearby. He doesn't know where he's going or why he's there in the first place, but there's one thing he does know, and he pauses in front of some old-looking rocks and stares out into the distance, probably towards the ocean. As he quietly says to himself,
well, I guess this is why they call it Dunkirk.
Smash cut to interior, battleship. Later? The captain of the ship is speaking on the radio to other battleships about something that we haven't been properly introduced to yet or even made aware of prior to right now. Also, we have absolutely no idea who this captain is or what side he's fighting for slash with. Welcome to Dunkirk. The captain sets down the radio and looks pensively and poetically out towards the ocean. It's very brooding, and we hear the men around him wonder what the fuck is even going on right now in this movie. Spoken to no one but himself.
The enemy tanks and soldiers on land have all stopped.
But why, Captain?
Why waste valuable manpower when they can just pick us off from the air?
Beat.
Say, what's going on with all those men on the beach, sir? Are they on our side, or is that the enemy? Also, are they getting ready for war, or getting ready to leave it?
The captain takes a pull from his cigarette that we didn't know he was smoking until right now, and also I'm not even sure if you're allowed to smoke cigs on the inside of a battleship, but this captain is doing it anyways because that's the type of leadership you need to survive a Dunkirk.
Captain, did you hear what I asked?
I did, chap.
Any chance you have some answers?
Look out at those birds, Nigel.
POV shot of a group of birds flying poetically in formation.
I know as much as they do.
And really the same can be said of the audience at this point. Also, guess what? That old man on the beach earlier, he isn't Dunkirk. No, no. This guy, the battleship captain, he is actually Dunkirk. And this is his movie. Bet you didn't see that coming, did you? And that's why we call in the biz a MacGuffin. You have just been fooled by way of a MacGuffin in order to keep you guessing, but you already knew that because you're watching Dunkirk. Cut to exterior, battleship, later, or also maybe earlier, not clear. Loud planes whiz by our battleship as a World War II dogfight ensues in the skies. And it might actually be a World War I dogfight, but we're not really sure what time any of this is happening or taking place. Also, did they have planes in World War I? Either way, Dunkirk has planes. So many planes. And yet also, not really that many planes. A sailor looks out into the ocean, pensive, brooding, poetic, as loud gunfire and loud bombs go off around him. But also, all of this is off screen. You only hear the bombs in Dunkirk, and that's what makes it fun. And there are actually so many bombs in this movie. In fact, in order to hear them properly, you need to see this movie in 70mm IMAX. But before we get a chance to learn anything about the sailor, like his name, his country, his purpose, or anything besides the fact that he is pensive, brooding, and poetic, we cut to interior, plane, later, I think. Close-up on a pilot as he's maneuvering his aircraft through, presumably, a dogfight. But also, we don't really know because there wasn't any sort of establishing shot to set up where he's flying or what's going on around him or even what country he's a pilot for.
That's right. I'm back, baby. But not to give you any necessary information or help you understand what's actually going on in this movie. Instead, I'm here to tell you something that you already know, that this pilot isn't our main pilot. He's just a MacGuffin pilot. The real pilot this movie is about is over there.
We see a wide expanse of shot of the sky. Off in the distance are a few specks that we presume to be more planes, as the narrator continues.
Yep, those are some more planes. And in one of those planes is a man.
Cut to interior plane. Definitely later, right? Close up on a new pilot. He's maneuvering through a different dogfight.
And not just any man. This man is played by Tom Hardy. And he may, in fact, actually be Dunkirk, instead of those other guys from before that we thought were Dunkirk. If that ends up being the case, then the stuff I said before was just part of another big MacGuffin. P.S. Welcome to Dunkirk.
We rack focus on our main man. Even though it's already 1 hour and 10 minutes into this movie, it feels like this man, this pilot, whose name has to be Dunkirk, is actually the main character of this movie. But also, here's the thing about this man. We don't know anything about him, except that he flies a loud plane, and he's either in Dunkirk, if it's a thing, or he's about to pull a Dunkirk, if it's a thing you do.
Pull a Dunkirk.
Or he is, in fact, Dunkirk, or maybe it's his plane's name. But listen, you're going to need all 70 millimeters of that IMAX screen space to find out. Also, this man's mouth is going to be covered by some sort of mask for all of his dialogue, so good luck figuring out anything that he's saying. But also, he's only going to say, like, 4 things during this movie, so it's really not a big deal anyways. P.S. Welcome to Dunkirk. Cut to interior, fighter plane, day, sort of. That was unintelligible dialogue by the pilot with the mask on his face, just to be clear.
You wrote Think Star Fox for Nintendo 64,
right?
Which is so accurate.
I never knew what those guys were saying.
Your father used to save me like that, too.
Can I get just a tail end of that dialogue? Just leave me in my next one. I don't know about you blokes, but I'd rather be having a point at the pub watching snooker than be up here with me knickers in the twirl chasing all these blimey Germans or Japs or whoever we were fighting in World War I, if this is World War I.
Oi, I'll be getting ripped with me mates right about now.
It just occurred to me that one of these dudes might be Australian. The pilots are interrupted by loud gunfire and loud bombs and loud plane noises whizzing by as we smash cut to title, over black, the Roman numeral number 4 and the word clouds. We hold on this title card for a few seconds, but it only makes sense after you've already seen the movie plus talked about it with your friends who read about exactly what the title card means on the internet before they watched the actual movie because they are fucking assholes. Or it's entirely possible that the title card never makes sense and this is just Welcome to Dunkirk. Cut to exterior, small boat, earlier, sort of. We start wide, then we pull close on the boat. Inside it, a man. His name? Man, you already know. This motherfucker is Dunkirk. He looks pensive. He's brooding. It's poetic. As he sails his boat towards impending doom that is always off screen and only hinted at by other people. With all of that 70mm of IMAX screen space, we'd never actually see what this man is sailing towards, but trust me, it's bad and it's doom. And not just any kind of doom, the poetic kind of doom. Real pensive and brooding shit, you know? A sailor on his boat pops his head out from the galley, if that's a thing.
And what's in that head?
That, son, that's bad. And doom.
another sailor who was actually standing in front of us the whole time, but we couldn't see him because of the way the camera was positioned. But trust me, that was intentional to make things more poetic and also part of a MacGuffin that you don't know about yet, frantically interrupts.
I'm not going back. I can't go back there. That place, that war, it's all gone Dunkirk.
Yeah, that's right. We're verbing it now, too.
Boy, you listen here. There's a fight coming, whether we want it or not. It's unavoidable. Every man has to face his demons. Our demons. Our Dunkirk.
Oh, that's also... No, old man. We don't have to face these demons. We can just turn around and sail back to England.
Or Ireland or France, maybe. Part of the allure of Dunkirk, my friends, is that all the characters sound British, they look Irish, and they're played by Australian actors. P.S. I'm American. Also, P.S. Welcome to Dunkirk. Cut two. Title card. Over black. The Chinese sign for trees and the word alchemy. Cut two. Exterior. The beach from the start of the movie. Dusk. The soldiers are all still lined up, but not fighting or doing anything. You might think they're about to finally get into battle with the enemy or finally get into a ship and go home, but you would be wrong, my friend. That's more of a Dunkirk 2 type of story. In this movie, we pan across the beach and land on the young soldier from earlier. I describe him by name, but we never learn it. But it's definitely the same young soldier from the beginning, except now he looks a little different. A little cleaner, a little less pensive, less brooding, still poetic. It's almost as if the movie has been jumping around in time this whole time, and holy shit, the end of this movie is actually the beginning! P.S. Welcome to Dunkirk! Before we get a full handle on how this narrative device actually affects everything that we've just watched, we abruptly cut to exterior, empty beach, possibly the same one from before, but now it's dawn. A wide shot of the waves crashing against the shore as the sun comes up. It's peaceful. It's poetic. It's Dunkirk. Over this shot of the beach, we see a text crawl that reveals that our narrator was in fact actually one of the previously seen characters, possibly Dunkirk.
Text crawl.
And this whole movie was him telling and reliving his story to his son if he lived, or to God slash the sea slash Dunkirk if he died. Except actually, I'm not sure that this movie has a Dunkirk, so guess what? You've just been Dunkirk. There is no narrator. Inception!
Fade to black.
And
that's good.
Nolan does it again.
He does it again.
Auteur visionary Christopher Nolan.
He always does.
Really tricks us into feeling dumber than we're actually smart.
But that's why we love him.
Leo better be getting his little gold man for this one.
Oh, for sure, dude. For playing Soldier 4?
Yeah.
He deserves it.
Faceless off-screen soldier.
No question.
How much time did you put into writing this?
Oh, that I really, man, it just came out of me, man.
I haven't seen him in 3 days.
Because yours is good. That's very funny.
I really give all the credit to Christopher Nolan, man.
I mean,
really,
of course.
He did the heavy lifting.
Yeah.
I would put very good odds on the fact that Christopher Nolan almost sarcastically insults readers through his actual scripts.
Oh, absolutely.
You know 100% he's like, but you knew it was the Joker the whole time because he's kind of a mastermind. You'll see later. Yeah. Oh, that was good. That was Dunkirk.
It's a heavy movie, guys. I mean, really, you need to like smoke a cigarette afterwards and kind of unwind.
There's a lot to digest.
Yeah.
I bet the script for the trailer was that long, and the trailer was people on a boat, and it just went, and then it was over.
That's pretty much all I had seen was the trailer, and I think I saw one clip on YouTube. And one of my friends said something about title cards.
I know one of the Jonases is in it. A Jonas brother, isn't
really?
He?
Really?
Yeah. Harry Styles is in it.
Oh,
also.
Maybe it's Harry Styles that I'm thinking of.
Yeah, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I think he might be the young soldier.
Wait,
yeah.
Are there also... I thought the only, like, name actor in it was Tom Hardy. You don't actually see him.
I mean, I think Harry Styles also... The thing was that he's, like, barely in it.
Yeah.
Oh, classic Nolan. Classic Dunkirk, of course.
Yeah. It actually stars a CGI David Bowie for most of it.
Oh, that's cool.
That's really cool.
Yeah. It's a hologram. Everyone keeps saying, can we get the hologram on here?
I like that.
Who's saying that?
It ends with them all at Coachella. They're all saying it. One of their dads knew a guy got him wristbands. All right, so we transition through time from Best Picture nominee Dunkirk, which will not win, to Best Picture The Darkest Hour, which will not only not win, will remind people it existed when they say these are the nominees for Best Picture.
Very true.
And so this is Darkest Hour, Dark as Hell. Written by Devin Walker.
Yes. And we've got Kyle here. We'll be reading the part of Winston Churchill
We've got Alex. Alex is going to be Alfred, the butler from Batman, and he will be referred to as that every single time.
Nice.
And he also is Lee Jordan.
Very Christopher Nolan to even be getting residuals from the second script.
That's genius. That's the ultimate inception that he's pulling. Is that he's actually a part of every movie.
Yeah. And then we've Todd, right?
Yep.
Todd is going to be reading as Pierce Brosnan, as James Bond.
Very nice.
Yes. And yeah, guys, this is the version of The Darkest Hour that I've written today. let's see. All right. Interior. Winston Churchill's home. Night. Alfred, the butler from Batman, serves tea to Winston Churchill and James Bond, played by Pierce Brosnan, as they discuss what to do about the whole Hitler, this whole Hitler thing. You can tell that Pierce Brosnan is not feeling Churchill at all. The entire room is lit with one candle.
Very Christopher Nolan.
Your tea, Mr. Churchill, Mr. Bond.
Alfred, the butler from Batman, places the tea on the table. Pierce Brosnan nods thankfully. Churchill takes a sip and is instantly furious.
Jesus Christ, Alfred! Did you just serve me sleepy time tea?
Well, sir, it's just that...
It's just that I'm going to send you back to Gotham to live with Bruce Wayne again if you ever bring me this bullshit again. Where's the Earl Grey?
We ran out last night, and it's just been so dark everywhere since Hitler's militia stole all of the lights.
Churchill is quiet for a moment, then picks up his cup of tea, glances at it, and then glances up at Alfred, the butler from Batman.
I swear to God, Alfred, I know I told you you could come here to have a safe place to stay away from Bruce Wayne. But if you fuck up my tea one more time, I swear I'll hit you harder than he ever did.
Churchill lifts his teacup swiftly, and Alfred, the butler from Batman, begins to scurry away. Churchill throws his teacup at Alfred, the butler from Batman, as Alfred, the butler from Batman, exits the room. The cup shatters. Churchill turns back to speak to Pierce Brosnan's rendition of James Bond. The two are straining to see each other in the dimly lit room.
All right. It's time that we take care of this whole Hitler thing. This has gotten out of hand.
I knew he was insane, but I never thought he would steal all the lights in London. And he has 1 million Jews to block out the sun.
It's so fucking dark!
Bloody hell!
Churchill furrows his brow and scoots his chair in.
All right, Bond. I was hoping that you'd be able to use some of your expertise as an international spy to help stop Hitler.
Pierce thinks about this for a moment.
Why, yes. I was thinking that I'd take this organization down from the inside.
Churchill looks pleased.
Okay. Tell me more.
Well, I plan to strike down the Nazi security forces and then head straight to Adolf Hitler's bedroom.
Churchill appears thrilled as the plan begins to unfold.
Ha-ha! Yes! And then the moment that I finally arrive at Adolf Hitler's bedroom...
Churchill is ecstatic, and he pounds his fist on the table.
Yes, you get to his room, and then you...
head take a ride at Adolf's room and make a beeline to his sister Angela's room.
Churchill quickly deflates as he realizes that this plan is not what he expected.
Angela?
Pierce smiles as he explains.
Why, yes, Angela Hitler. I remember the first day I laid eyes on her. It was in Monaco at the Grand Prix. She was with her husband at the time, but I just knew that I had to have her. And I swear to you that I am going to fuck Adolf Hitler's sister like she's never been fucked before. A proper bonding.
Churchill puts his hands to his face and rubs his eyes. Churchill looks at Pierce Brosnan for a few moments before speaking.
Please leave.
Wait, so you don't want me to...
Leave immediately.
Pierce is slightly dejected, but he seems to understand.
All right, but I'm still probably going to have sex with Angela Hitler.
I know that, Bond. Now please leave.
Pierce walks out of the room slowly. As Pierce exits, Alfred, the butler from Batman, reappears with a pot of tea.
Mr. Churchill, I've got your Earl Grey here. Also, you've got a visitor.
All right, well, bring me my tea before I get... I don't even know what I'm committing to with this voice.
It's pretty
but
good.
Every time it's
a
little
good.
Different.
Whatever it is, it's cranked up. Yeah.
All right, well, please bring me my tea and before I have another guest.
Alfred, the butler from Batman, apprehensively approaches the table and sets down the pot of tea. Alfred gingerly pours the cup of tea for Churchill. Churchill takes a sip, and Alfred, the butler from Batman, waits for Churchill's response. Churchill takes a single sip and places the cup down.
Alfred, what temperature did you bring this to?
Alfred, the butler from Batman, smiles, as though he's very pleased with himself as he answers.
30 degrees.
Churchill's anger is slowly starting to build.
Celsius or Fahrenheit, Alfred?
Alfred lowers his head as he realizes his mistake.
Fahrenheit, sir.
Alfred, you are the worst possible butler I could have imagined. And I see why Bruce Wayne used to hit you. I regret the day that I agreed to save you from that man. Leave this room immediately and take your cold-ass tea.
Alfred, the butler from Batman, gathers the teapot and the teacup and begins to leave.
Sir, your guest is Mr. Lee Jordan.
I'm sorry, who?
Lee Jordan, the one black kid that's in those first Harry Potter movies and is occasionally mentioned in the books.
Oh, yes, that kid. He's literally the only black person in the entire Harry Potter franchise. And he is maybe five lines total. They made seven movies. It's crazy, really.
Quite crazy, sir. Here's Mr. Lee Jordan.
Lee Jordan walks into the room as Alfred exits. Lee sits down at the table across from Churchill.
Mr. Jordan, do you have any idea as to how we get Adolf Hitler to move all of the Jews from in front of the sun?
Hitler? Oh, no, the Jews blocking the fun thing was all me. And they're not moving until I get some additional scenes in the book and all the films. I'm the only black character in the whole story, and they gave me like five lines total. Mm. It's mental.
Mm. Churchill nods in agreement.
It is pretty mental. So you're saying that if I can convince... Hold on, I want to make sure we line out exactly what you're saying. If you, Lee Jordan, are saying if I can convince J.K. Rowling... to add some additional scenes with you and them, then you'll let the Jews and everyone else go about their lives?
EF.
Done. JK and I actually have the same literary agent, so I'll give her a call.
Thank you so much, man.
No problem.
The two shake hands, and the light is restored. The darkest hour is finally ended.
And yes. Scene. I don't know.
A lot of accent development happened. Yeah,
in both of them.
I don't know if I kept a consistent one, but none of them were Pierce Brosnan. That's for sure. That I can confirm.
That's what people say when you ask, who's your favorite James Bond? I don't have a consistent one, but none of them were Pierce Brosnan. Pierce Brosnan.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Dude, GoldenEye lives up, man. The game and the movie.
It definitely was a fun video
game.
I'll
defend it.
Wow. I couldn't tell you a single thing about what The Darkest Hour is about.
I know it has something to do with Winston Churchill trying to negotiate with Hitler.
Is Pierce Brosnan really in it?
No. Okay. Pierce Brosnan is not in the movie.
Somewhere he just like perked up. He's like, am I in it?
Wait, is Lee Jordan really in it?
No, Lee Jordan is not in it.
Fair enough. Those are just, so it's just Alfred and Churchill.
Gary Oldman.
All I know is Gary Oldman's probably going to win an Oscar for it. Probably. That seems to be the thing.
Gary Oldman's the only character. I intentionally didn't read up, like, I'd read nothing. I read like a one sentence description about the movie and then just decided to add in British characters.
I've seen the poster and I think you nailed it.
Yeah, pretty close. Yeah.
It feels like something like that probably happened.
Also,
movie,
even
right?
If it's not, you can always just say afterwards it was a big MacGuffin. you did some Inception on him.
Dunkirk!
Yep.
Just shout that at the end of the
movie. I would like, that needs to be the new Inception button, is just something. Instead of the bomb, yep. It's just something going Dunkirk.
I like that.
Oh man, those are great.
Yeah.
I don't know. Les, what Oscar, what Best Picture nominees have you seen
this year?
This year,
I don't know.
Let's maybe go down a list here. Lady Bird,
seen it.
You've seen Lady Bird?
Told three people that I saw it.
I haven't yet. Yeah, I haven't, and I want to really badly.
We haven't seen. No one's seen Dunkirk. No one's seen Darkest Hour. Get Out.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
My mom saw it. Told me about it.
Okay. Cool. That's. pretty much it. Thank you for pulling that up.
Oh.
The Post.
Nope.
Yes.
Shape of Water.
Yes.
No.
Three Billboards.
Yep. Yes.
I haven't.
Phantom Thread.
Yes. Fuck Phantom Thread.
Really?
Call Me By Your Name. I haven't seen it,
but I really want to. I haven't seen Call Me By Your Name.
I have seen Call Me By Your Name.
Okay, so what's your favorite? Because, Devin, it looks like you've seen 8 of them or 7 of them.
What? Is it that many? I don't know. Let's see. My favorite is probably...
Darkest Hour?
Probably the version of The Darkest Hour that I wrote. I think that's my favorite of all of them.
Non-biased, I would say The Thing I Wrote in an Hour is better than all 9 Best Picture movies.
That's how I feel. Probably Call Me By Your Name or Three Billboards.
Yeah.
One of those was probably
I think mine, even though I haven't seen it yet, is Phantom Thread. Just because as a filmmaker, you have to love everything P.T. Anderson does. So
yeah.
It's definitely my favorite movie.
Yeah.
Of all.
I think...
Or Paddington 2, which I don't know why it's not up there.
I still haven't seen it.
Error.
Did you see Paddington
2? Paddington 2 is phenomenal.
That's what everybody keeps
saying. I watched Paddington on Netflix.
That's the thing?
I cried.
Wonderful.
And then this one's supposedly even
Paddington
better.
Paddington is good. This one's better. This is like Toy Story level.
Really?
I don't know if I want to go that far, but it's pretty great.
I kept thinking it was a bit how much everybody was talking about
it. It seems like
Paddington
the movie everyone would be like, let's all love Paddington 2.
Exactly.
But then it was at like...
It's legit,
no
though.
Bad reviews.
But
it's good. No, okay. I felt the same way. I thought it was a bit at first, too.
Okay, so
but maybe that is the bit.
What does it take? So I want to talk like about going to actually to go to still see movies in a movie theater, and you like make jokes about it with Christopher Nolan, where he's very specific about what he wants to happen with it, almost to the point where it's probably unbearable to talk to him about it.
Oh my God, I can't imagine.
But what does it take for you to go see a movie in a theater versus waiting for it?
Usually, Vin Diesel needs to be in it.
Yeah,
like, that's usually what gets me out of the apartment.
That's key. That's key.
What's the last movie you saw that's not one of these in a movie theater?
That isn't a Vin Diesel movie, or is?
We'd have to go pretty far
back. Fast 8 or the
and
triple,
Fast 7.
And Fast 7 and Triple X.
I guess the scenes in Fast 7 he wasn't in. That's probably the last time I did that movie.
No, we saw John Wick 2 in the theaters.
Yep.
What else did I see? A lot of times I'll have like a friend who will give me a free ticket to their movie at a film festival. Mm. Really, for me, it's either free tickets or Vin Diesel. That's the two things that'll get me to a movie theater.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no, In Great Girls West was the last one we saw in a theater.
Oh, that I liked that.
That
one.
Was the most viscerally uncomfortable I've ever been in a movie theater.
Well, during,
that's
which,
awesome.
During which part?
During the entire film. I thought it was really, really good, and I will never watch it again.
Really? What made you feel so
because
weird?
Because
it
was so accurately sad.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because you are so close to being the person who is a mentally ill protagonist.
Yep. It's incredible. It really is incredible. Yeah. That's I remember we've saw it twice, actually.
Yeah.
A friend of ours was one of the guys who made it, and that was like a thing where the first time I laughed like as hard as I've laughed since like Punch Drunk Love, probably at like a movie like that. And the second time it was like I almost wanted to cry.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. We got into a pretty serious Uber car accident before the second time we saw it.
Yeah.
Really?
Which might have something to do with that. That might have maybe made me feel a little bit more. It wasn't on 70mm IMAX, though.
Imagine
was on the 405.
Yeah.
How are we doing, everyone? Let's start this thing over. We're getting into Dunkirk by Todd Sklar. As I think about a lot about like going to see... We talk sometimes on this show about the difference between, especially like prestigious movies. These are 9 movies, which is such a trivial number, that are nominated for Best Picture this year. And... with the exception of maybe 2 or 3 of them, these aren't the movies we're going to talk about from this year forever or from last year.
Mm.
And you think about lots of times the Best Picture winner is a movie you kind of – it becomes trivia that it won Best Picture.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that has been a thing as of late. That's really true.
Especially with last year with Moonlight. That's definitely going to be –
You think?
Think about that.
Yeah.
What were the other movies from last year? That seems to be a
movie. Did Moonlight win last year? I thought La La Land.
Remember La La Land?
No, it was a fake out.
Inception! They got Dunkirk!
We got beat.
Yes.
You turned the Oscars off immediately when they said La La Land, and you're on Twitter so infrequently. Well, I'm not going to look this up for a year.
But yeah, I feel like that's going to be the thing that people talk about. Not even so much that Moonlight won, just the fact that there was that weird misunderstanding about it.
When I look at the Best Picture nominees from something like last year, and last year just, I sound dumb, but it just happened. It's not like, years and years ago, I still think a movie like The Social Network is the most important movie of that year.
Yeah.
It's the movie we still rewatch and talk about.
Yeah.
It's very relevant and holds up. This is last year, and I look at this list, and I think Moonlight and Arrival are the only movies people will watch in 5 years.
I believe it.
Yeah.
And it may be especially
I don't even know
Arrival.
If they would watch either of those, to be honest. Like, I don't know if either of those got the right due that they deserved.
Hacksaw Ridge was nominated?
There's just a lot of movies I remember bits and pieces of.
I remember Hidden Fences with Denzel Washington.
Oh, yeah.
That's
I forgot about that.
Yeah.
I have a special...
If you're close with your black dad, you have to go see it.
Obviously.
That's just part of the rules.
Are you just talking about Fences?
Yeah. Wait.
Hidden Fences is a satirical play hidden written figures. By Jordan Temple.
Oh, Hidden Figures.
I have to give a shout out.
You know what? I know of that.
You know, Jordan Temple is a comedian in New York.
Yeah.
And we share the same birthday.
Nice. Which
is great. And he, so many people confuse Fences and Hidden Figures that he wrote Hidden Fences, which is a play combining the two movies, which is better than any of the movies that we've had.
That's awesome.
It's and so, Jordan, so many people did exactly that because there was such weird promotion for Oscar movies now, and
it's pretty good.
The way movies are distributed is so much different, and that those just kind of got lumped in as one movie.
There's fences and
Hidden Figures right next to each other.
Yeah, I'll always hold a special place in my heart for La La Land because I saw it with my girlfriend right before I moved to L.A., and then she just broke up with me. So that one's going to be there
So
for
it sounds
a
like
while.
You just made the special place for it.
And kind
it's
of,
special
kind
place
of.
Like where Haley Joel Osment goes in Sixth Sense in that closet with the balloon.
Exactly. And I don't want to put too much pressure on us in this podcast, but I think if this podcast does well enough, she might take me back. So let's work on it.
Well, boy, I hope she likes 3-digit numbers.
But no, it is weird. A lot of those movies last year, and even the year before that, too, it's not that they're forgettable, but they didn't really...
Spotlight won the year before that, which is like a really good movie.
Spotlight
and then you're like, that was a good movie.
Yeah.
The Big Short was good.
I feel the same way about Spotlight as I do about Get Out, where I feel like that's a great movie right now. If that movie came out in 1997, that would be just the normal movie you saw
We've
on a random Friday
this
night.
Before,
like,
and I wanted to talk to you about this on the podcast about how you give the – because I talked to you about Get Out and how incredible I thought the screenplay was and how tight it was. And you had an idea that we didn't really introduce what everyone here does.
Sure, yeah.
So Devin's stand-up comedian. He lives in Austin, Texas.
Yep.
And Todd, you're a writer and a director. Alex, you're a writer.
Professional
and an
impressionist
professional
and
impressionist.
Voice actor.
I'm a British man who only does British impressions. And so and for the two of you, as people who've written a lot of scripts, and Devin who writes all the time as well, Todd had this idea that movies from, we're thinking like 97 and earlier and things like that, were generally all tight, well-written scripts.
Yeah, that used to be the prerequisite
it wasn't
to making
like,
a movie.
Yeah, it wasn't impressive to have no fat.
Yeah, and have everything kind of lead up to something and make sense and everything have a purpose and every scene have a purpose. And it's an interesting thing where it's been a slow build, I feel like, over the last like 10, 15 years where like movies really just got like looser and kind of like casually worse.
Is this where your repetitive MacGuffin idea comes from?
It's very possible. That's one way we could turn this around. Yeah. I feel like we need more MacGuffin. But
I didn't know that word before today. Thank you for introducing that into my vocabulary.
Is that a breakfast MacGuffin?
I have to say, it's been a long time. I'm pretty positive I'm using it incorrectly.
Okay.
So.
I think a MacGuffin is something that's supposed to attract your attention that is incidental to the
classic
outcome.
Hitchcock.
It's like a Hitchcock thing.
Yeah. I know
like, shout out to Ramsey Wise.
It's
like a Hitchcock thing.
The suitcase in Pulp Fiction is a MacGuffin. That's the only one I know.
Mm-hmm. Because it really doesn't affect anything and you're fascinated with it.
If you're a fucking idiot and don't understand the
movie,
dude.
I read on a Christopher Nolan message board that it's What's-His-Face's soul.
I actually got a poster on my wall in my dorm you guys should see. It'll let you know a little bit more about Pulp Fiction. So what's an example of a perfect script to you, perfect screenplay?
Oof, man.
Besides Die Hard.
Die Hard.
Yeah, okay. That's pretty much, it's hard to find better ones than that. That is, I mean, I think Midnight Run is up there. Dirty Dancing is pretty much A League of Their Own. Roadhouse.
Major League.
Major League, absolutely.
Roadhouse, the best movie to take place in Missouri.
Oh, no question.
Yeah.
And that ever will. Roadhouse might be the best movie to take place in America.
You got Roadhouse and Dirty Dancing. Are those both Patrick Swayze?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You knew how to pick them. Very good.
That's a writer's actor right there is what it sounds like.
That is. Yeah.
Okay. I don't know. I missed like all of the 90s when it comes to movies. Like I've never seen Die Hard.
That.
I've never seen the Terminator movies. I've never seen Dirty Dancing.
He's never seen T2.
You got to go backwards. Like, start with 5 and then work your way backwards.
Start with Salvation.
how old are y'all?
I'm 34.
33.
Okay.
I'm 29.
What about you?
I just turned 27.
Nice.
Yeah, so I really missed the 90s in terms of, like, film watching. I feel like I didn't even, like, really pick up on what was happening until, like, 2004 or something like that.
That's good, though. You have this treasure trove now to go back to.
That's like, true.
That's
I can
fun.
Revisit, yeah.
I wish that I'd never seen
I kind of think sometimes the late, like, mid-80s to mid-90s, with the exception of Pulp Fiction, is always sort of shit on far as, like, prestige filmmaking.
Yeah, and it's great era.
Because you get, like, Shawshank and Pulp Fiction, which were the same year, and then people really don't pluck anything and say, that's what's other all-timers from there? But there's all these movies...
Jerry Maguire.
Goodfellas.
Yeah, Goodfellas, yeah, I guess. Goodfellas. But then you're still looking at the same year and a half period of time, like 93 to 94.
Yeah.
But then, you really don't hear any like prestige films from the 80s.
No, you know what's interesting? Because I feel like in the 80s...
You pulling up The Fugitive.
Yeah, that's a good one. Oh, yeah.
It's very subtle to pull up the Wikipedia of The Fugitive and put it on the screen.
That's what's up. Dude, Harrison Ford.
Richard.
Harrison Ford had an era there.
But The Fugitive I have seen, I don't disagree. It's a great movie.
Perfect movie.
But people really don't give any due to those sort of things, like they do the early 2000s or like Coen Brothers stuff.
Yeah.
Or things like that that carry a lot of weight.
Best movies are in the 80s and 90s too. I mean, arguably.
When was Fargo?
Fargo's 94.
Okay. So that's right around this time.
That's Lebowski. Another one of those movies that did that also. That's another one that didn't win Best Picture and clearly held above all of the ones.
This is a thing that I've gotten wrong multiple times because this is like a this might be like a mental disease, but I have like a delusional thing where I refuse to admit that Fargo didn't win Best Picture. Mm. That to me won Best Picture.
Oh, like, well, I hadn't thought about it that way. I guess I never thought about it in the way you lie to yourself.
Like, that's legit the best picture maybe ever.
That's how I am with Up.
Up was incredible. Right. Up should have been Best Picture. There's no question. What won that year instead?
I don't know. Something
as an animated film ever won Best Picture?
No.
No.
Okay.
And if Up didn't, there isn't
going to
be one.
I think Up is probably cool. WALL-E, people were also obsessed with.
WALL-E was good.
WALL-E was good, but it wasn't on that same level as Up. That was like...
Yeah. Up was so good that the first 15 minutes of it is almost pop culture sad. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
You can be like, oh, is that Up sad?
That's why I've never seen Up, because everybody's the first 15 minutes are so sad. It's so beautiful. I'm like, I don't feel like shit right now. So I've never been in the mood to watch it.
See, sometimes I will watch the first 15 minutes and then just lay and face the ceiling.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I can't feel on my own. I need some.
you need a children's film to get you there.
Yeah, that's they're onto something, treating kids like people.
Hurt Locker one. Wow.
Oh,
that's crazy. That's a good movie.
But 2009 was also the first year they expanded to up to 10 Best Picture nominees. And so, I mean,
Blind Side got nominated?
If you look at 2009, is Up and Inglourious Bastards that people will talk about. Avatar will exist because that's all he's going to make the rest of forever.
Hasn't he already supposed to have made like three more of those? Like, what's going on with that?
I don't know.
He's booked up for like next like 25 years.
Well, but time actually works differently on the Avatar planet. So,
touche.
Avatar 2 comes out yesterday.
Inception!
And it's actually Matt Damon on the planet.
Ooh.
Dunkirk.
That is a Dunkirk.
Such a good example of the Best Picture nominees sort of indicating some of the ones with lasting power, but Hurt Locker is good, but it's not going to be people are going to watch Inglourious Bastards forever.
Yep.
And people are going to rewatch Up.
People are going to remember Precious forever but never watch it again.
Yeah.
Also possible.
They will also remember it because the tagline remaining in the title of
the movie.
I can't
believe it. Why?
They went for it.
Yeah,
that's Sapphire has the greatest lawyer of all time.
Incredible.
Or whoever kept based on the novel pushed by Sapphire in the name of the movie. Incredible. But that happens a lot with that. And they expand out to 10, and then you just.
Let's go. What do we got in like 2010?
Inception.
Oh, there's a social network. Artist.
But then the King's Speech one.
I have a really good The Artist story that I, prior to this year, have never been able to say publicly. But now that Mr. Weinstein has been banished to wherever the hell he is, I can't get in trouble for this.
Here we go. Buckle up. Yeah.
So, got another artist story on the podcast.
Way back in the day, and I'll keep this, I'll do the abbreviated version. But
you really don't have to.
I ran a marketing company in between my two features that basically took movies on the road, and then it evolved into like doing like street team marketing. Long story short, like studios and distributors started hiring us to do like event screens. Screenings and like guerrilla marketing and all sorts of crazy shit. And we had started working with the Weinstein Company. They had given us
that's
a couple
where you try
films.
And get people to go see the new King Kong Skull Island.
Yeah, it's where you can see that's some real guerrilla marketing. No, but actually, we probably should have done that movie.
It's good.
I've seen it seven times on Virgin America flights.
I watched it on a boat.
Love that movie.
It's a good one.
I really
enjoyed
the like 2005 one though with Jack Black. How'd you
that
guys
one
feel
scared
about
me.
Yeah, that one was good.
There's a lot of big spiders in that.
Yes.
But back to The Artist. So Weinstein Company had been hiring us on a couple films prior to this, and their VP of marketing brought us in, me and my business partner, Maury, and he was like, hey, so we got this other movie that Bob, Harvey Weinstein's brother, he runs half of the company and Harvey does the other half. He's like, Bob bought this movie at Toronto. Harvey was going to bury it because he got pissed at Bob. But then he's like, you know, maybe there's something to this. So we thought we'd do like an Oscar campaign with it. I just realized that the butt of the the payoff of this story is not going to be great because you already know it's the artist. But long story short, Harvey decided, like, maybe we'll do something with it. You guys do the college tours. And he thinks, you know, maybe it's like a weird black and white movie. Maybe, like, college kids will like it at, like, film schools. What do you guys think? And we're like, I guess, like, you know, send us a screener and we'll see. And he's like, yeah, you know, we'll send you a screener. If you guys don't want to take it on a tour, we'll probably just bury it and, you know, that'll be the end of it. But whatever, let us know. So he sends us a link and it's the artist. And me and Maury are both like, that was a great movie. That is also definitely not a movie we can go get college kids to see. Like, that's insane. So we called him back. We're like,
I just like the idea of you guys being like, we got a double feature with the artist and Mystery Team.
If you guys want to go see it. But it's crazy because then we called him back. We're like, hey, you know, like, there's nothing we can really do for this. But, like, this is a great movie. Like, you guys shouldn't bury this. And he's like, yeah, I know. But, you know, Harvey's crazy. Him and Bob, they get into it, whatever. He's like, you know, thanks for giving it a look. You sure you guys don't want to take it? Like, we'll pay you your regular fee. It doesn't even have to, like, draw anybody. And we were like, no. At this point, like, I think we were very self-conscious that it would do really bad and they never hire us again. So we turned it down. And, like, 3.5 months later, I see, like, a poster for it out on the, like, this is when we lived in New York, like, out on, like, 6th Avenue or something. It's, like, it's a poster. It's movies coming out, like, that weekend, and it's got, like, already got, like, Oscar buzz. And I'm like, this fucking guy just took a movie he was going to shelf, and now it's going to be, like, his $30 million Oscar campaign? Yeah. Like, what the fuck is going on with this industry?
And then it won Best Picture. Being shelved to winning Best Picture.
That literally almost was a movie that 8 kids at Iowa State University saw on a Range Life tour, and instead it won Best Picture.
Jesus.
Think about how many people's lives would have been changed by that. Hmm. Like, Jean Dujardin or the French guy in the movie, like, that dude,
dog.
Like, that dog, everybody, the guy who colored that movie and uncolored it, like, he probably is the black and white guy now.
Yeah.
He wouldn't have a career. Blew me away. That, like, that, I always think about that when, like, we have, like, a movie fall apart or, like, something crazy happens. Like, this whole fucking industry, everybody's nuts.
See, that's why we got into stand-up for the stability.
We
didn't want to worry about the ups and downs of independent film distribution.
Just wanted to get that steady paycheck. I want a steady weekly paycheck.
I made $4 the other night, and they paid me in $2 bills.
I also got paid in a $2 bill recently. Like,
really?
Saturday. Yeah, I got paid in a $2
bill. That's awesome. That's
I mean,
what,
they gave me other bits. I mean, other bills, but that was one of them.
What? That's so, yeah. Comedy pays.
Was it from Kyle?
Funny money.
Yes. It was his show. He gave me a $2 bill.
That's good. That's a MacGuffin.
I thought of just you to give you these $2 bills that definitely weren't handed to me on Monday. That is so bizarre. So that's the paper. So if you're making movies out there, know that while it is probably your fault, it might not be.
Yeah, it's very possible that there were exterior forces that had nothing to do with your
Imagine
movie.
Imagine if you just forgot your email password for a little bit.
It's gone. Totally crazy. That movie, a totally different trajectory for every... And also, just think about this. Like, that movie doesn't win Best Picture that year because it went on a Range Life tour and died.
Yeah.
A different movie does, and everybody in that different movie's career takes off.
Mm. Yeah.
The butterfly effect of how many crazy fucking things go wrong or right in this industry is just like...
Yeah, like, maybe whoever that guy who directed Hugo, like, maybe his career takes off.
What would happen? Yeah, that would be incredible.
Is Martin Scorsese's half-animated, weird 3D children's movie?
Isn't Borat in it, too?
Yeah. Well, he plays
the character?
No.
Yeah.
No?
I thought it was a Borat movie.
Yeah. Him and his wife are both.
Isn't Hugo a Borat character? Sacha Baron Cohen character?
Bruno.
Yeah. Bruno. Bruno.
You're thinking Bruno. That would be interesting. Thing. Yes. But, hey, kids, come see the Sasha. Come see Bruno
in
the kids movie Martin Scorsese directed.
That's a mashup that needs to happen.
Bruno and Hugo?
Yeah.
I'd watch it.
I would too.
All right, guys. We're going to play some games.
Yeah.
We're getting the movie game time. Well, that's about right. We're about there, right? We got a couple games. I gave you guys a little lowdown beforehand. The first game is Before and Afters. It's sort of like the Wheel of Fortune. I say sort of because it's ripped off of the Wheel of Fortune thing.
The television program.
Mm. And so in this game, you will spin a giant wheel. No, this game is it's the Before and Afters. I've taken two movie titles and combined them into one movie title. And I will tell you the plot to that one movie. And so you know each of the before and afters here, at least one of the movies is a Best Picture winner.
Yeah. From any time?
From any time.
Okay.
Not that this is going to affect my effort level in this game, but what is the prize if we win?
Hmm.
And so the first one here that we have is... you mean besides another Guarana Antarctica, the Brazilian
nice.
Original?
Plug. Brazilian Good plug. Original. Solid natural plug. Yeah.
Okay, so here's our first one. I'll give you the plot, and then you tell me what the title of that movie would be. And the first one, I think, is easier. I'm going to hold this up so I can see. A young man on a game show answers questions about the time he was aboard a plane that was hijacked by Russian terrorists.
Quiz Show 1 or Air Force Show?
No. No, it's not Air Force.
Is that Quiz Show meets Air Force One?
It's Slumdog Millionaire and another thing.
Oh, Slumdog Force One. No.
Yeah, you're right, but how does that break down into a title?
Oh, I don't know.
Slumdog Millionaire Force One.
Oh,
oh
fuck. Okay.
I get it. Oh,
very
okay.
cool.
We'll use that one as the example.
Okay, very cool. So it's all
here,
together.
I think I said that.
I don't think you said that.
We can put it back.
Will you just say it now and we'll digitally shove you saying it into it?
I like that.
Oh, Slumdog.
It's a hard one.
Slumdog Air Force One.
That's a little blooper. We'll
Slumdog
fix that later.
Millionaire Force
Slumdog,
One.
Slumdog. All right. Slumdog Millionaire Force One.
Nice.
Oh, yeah. Very good.
That was easy.
Oh, good job.
All right, here's the next one. They get harder and worse.
Uh-oh.
Along with his girlfriend, a private detective takes on the difficult task of searching for a kidnapped Indian activist, who led the independence movement against British rule. The detective must deal with a disapproving lawman and a drug dealer and the girl's aunt.
Did you make up these movies?
These are real movies? One of these won
Best Picture.
I know
what this one is, but I don't know the – I can't think of the names of either one.
Is one of them – does that count? No, it doesn't.
That's none of the parts.
Is one of those Angelina Jolie movie? I feel like she makes movies like that.
I don't think so.
Is one of them Gandhi?
Mm-hmm.
Mahatma Gandhi.
No, that's just his first name.
I don't know what the –
Can you read the other relevant part?
Along with his girlfriend, a private detective takes on the difficult task of searching for a kidnapped Indian activist who led the independence movement against British rule.
Gandhi with the Wind.
No, but that's not a bad guess.
That's good.
The detective must deal with the disapproved – this other one is not a Best Picture winner.
Okay.
Oh, I got it. Gandhi in 60 seconds.
No, but that's also a good one. Once I found Gandhi, deciding what it was going to be mashed up with took me 45 minutes.
Fair enough.
Detective and his.
I'll give you a clue. The first movie that's not Gandhi is directed by Ben Affleck.
Gandhi Will Hunting.
No.
Jersey Girl.
Gone Girl. Oh no, it's the one weird.
It's not a best picture.
The Superman guy. No, I know what it is. It's the one that. Oh my god. No idea what the name of that movie is.
All right, ready for the answer?
Yeah.
And then Alex will have you say it. And
yeah.
We'll put it in.
Yeah.
Gone Baby Gandhi.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
I just would like it to be acknowledged that I have guessed one half of each one of these.
Yeah,
correctly. Yeah, that's true.
Specifically, yeah.
Very well done.
The Indian part.
All right, Alex, you want to say? Oh, it's gone. Or...
Yeah. Gone Baby Gandhi.
Almost got it.
Is it Gandhi Baby Gone?
No.
It's Wait, but now I know it. It's Gone Baby Gandhi.
Oh, it is.
Yes. Oh, man. I knew I could get it.
Good one, Alex.
All right. This one.
He does it again.
There's two right answers for this, depending on how you want to say it.
Damn.
A look at the three defining chapters in the life of a young black man growing up in Miami as he attempts to investigate the Catholic Church's child molestation rumors and provide proof of a cover-up.
Oh, okay. I do know what both of these movies are. Wait, it's...
Moonlight Spotlight.
Moonlight Doubt?
Moonlight Spotlight.
Spot Moonlight. Yeah, either of those would have been acceptable because it's bad and it doesn't make sense.
And now, Alex, you want to do the real one and we'll edit it in?
Yeah. Totally blanking on what the actual thing is.
Let's move on to the next one.
Benjamin Button, please.
All right, this is the last one. One of these is a Best Picture winner. The other one is one of my favorite movies that was definitely not nominated for Best Picture, but is a great movie. A young William Shakespeare is forced to lay low in a city he hates in Belgium, where surreal experiences lead him to meet his ideal woman and inspires him to write one of his most famous plays.
Shakespeare in Bruges.
I was going to get that one.
I really was going to do that.
That would be a good movie.
Wouldn't
it
be a good one?
Yeah, it would be really good.
I haven't seen either of those movies.
In Bruges is really good.
Yeah. Shakespeare in Love is a good movie.
It's good.
It's not like Shakespeare in Love is not as underrated as like I feel like a lot of other like romance prestige
people
movies.
People hate
are
it because
like,
it beat Saving Private Ryan.
That's right. I think Brokeback Mountain gets a bad name because people think it's a prestige romance movie. That movie is incredible.
Yeah.
Mm.
I think, they're just really good.
Yeah. What's the other one? The English Patient is like a great movie.
Yeah. Mm.
People, you don't sleep on the English Patient or Brokeback Mountain.
I only know the English Patient from Seinfeld.
Yeah,
that's the only reason I know anything.
Is
about
it Ralph Fiennes or Rafe Fiennes?
You can't. Your taster's choice.
But that's the
I think
same
anybody
guy.
Gets to do.
That is a two different.
No, it's Ed Helms.
Oh,
I think you're saying
God.
He goes by Edward sometimes.
Joseph Fiennes is in Shakespeare in Love, right?
Yep,
that is. And it all comes back to the Fiennes brother.
And in the other guy's in Bruges. He's the bad guy who picks up the phone.
Boom.
What a funny scene that is when he smashes the phone down after he gets off the phone with him. Because like the first time there's a new character in the whole thing. That movie is, that's the guy who wrote Three Billboards, right?
Yeah.
Yep. In Bruges is better.
I haven't seen Three Billboards, so I'm not ready to shit on it like everybody else is.
I'm not shitting on it. Okay. All right. We'll talk about it. Three Billboards for a minute before we get in the next.
Yeah.
Three Billboards is probably, it's been very fun having people explain to me what's right and wrong about where I grew up.
Oh, I forgot about the Missouri thing. I forgot about that.
Every year there's always the one that's like, this is an incredible movie. And then someone else tells us it's incredible and everyone's like, this is shit.
Yeah, that's true.
And it's kind of swinging. I think it's a movie with a lot of really good performances, with an interesting script that is painfully sympathetic to horrible people.
Right.
And to the point where even in Missouri, it's unrealistically sympathetic. Sam Rockwell.
Sam Rockwell.
Who, like, Moon is, like, an insanely overlooked, incredible. This guy is so good. He plays this racist police officer who, it's, like, explicitly hinted at, abused someone in a hate crime.
They say tortured.
Tortured someone.
And they say it very casually in the film. Right. They're just like, oh, yeah, he tortured that black guy.
Well, it might have been a casual thing.
Right. Maybe he just, like, knew the answer to a trivia question and wouldn't give it to the guy. there is a thing where racist people are forgiven very easily in Missouri and are, what is it called? Like, they will be, the amount that you have to change from being a bad person to being a slightly less shitty person in a place like Missouri to be vindicated and forgiven is very minimal.
Just letting somebody in traffic?
In that movie?
Exactly.
In real life. That was kind of my experience.
That's fair. You could be, if you are explicitly racist your whole life, mm-hmm. and then you hire a minority, people will be like, but that's just how he is.
Times have changed.
But the amount that Sam Rockwell's character is, sounds, and I don't like saying this because it's what everyone says about it, sounds like someone from outside the United States wrote an impression of Missouri.
Mm. I kind of felt that way about The Big Sick. I feel like that's like a movie that if you tell that movie from the other character's perspective, that's like a nightmare. That's a fucking horror movie.
Which other character?
Girl in a coma? You're in a coma. This fucking dude you broke up with is basically like creeping on your parents. And like, there's a Hitchcock version of The Big Sick that probably would have been win this picture.
That's true.
Oh, you're talking about The Sick Big?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
That's true. If you take The Big Sick and you just make the music a little less jolly, it's a frightening film.
It's a horror movie.
Yeah, it's taking three lines away from Ray Romano, away from being a horror movie. Yeah. It's also having...
Or adding three more.
I was going to say, the way to make it into a horror movie would be have any more stand-up.
That's fair.
If you want any movie to be a horror movie, show more of anyone's act.
That's good.
My least favorite part about that film was when like the JFL guy was there.
I get so uncomfortable.
Yeah, the JFL guy's there and he's like, oh my God, I'm sorry. It's just that my girlfriend is sick, and then just ruins this whole, no comic would ever do that.
I can't watch things with stand-up comedy. And I liked The Big Sick a lot.
Yeah.
I liked it too. Don't get me wrong, I liked it.
Tough time watching things with stand-up comedy in it because it makes me... It's either accurate and uncomfortable or inaccurate and upsettingly uncomfortable.
Yep,
that's fair.
And because the only comedians write a really accurate version I can't watch, and other people write a kind of insulting version that I can't watch.
But that was written by comedians.
I thought that is about as good as it gets for me for a while. And that stand-up isn't in it very much.
That's true.
And Kurt Braunohler is so funny.
He's really funny.
And kind of like made me okay with the entire
thing. I feel the same way about when I watch movies about like guys who are really good at podcast quizzes. I'm just like, you're either getting it right and I'm like, that's it, man, you got it, or they're getting it wrong. And
you're
like,
talking about Show Me the MeUndies?
Yes, exactly. irregardless of any of the Three Billboard racists, any of the discussion, I've never seen a better executed guy throwing another guy out of a window.
100%.
Incredible.
That was so cool.
Incredible.
That was a great scene.
And people will oftentimes say about it, well, how would all that stuff happen like that? I'm like, it'd be a pretty boring story if none of the exciting stuff happened.
Yeah,
I'm sure there were lots of other days where stuff didn't happen in the fake town in Missouri.
Yeah, this isn't like a biography of every day of a thing.
Right, we didn't just see her work at a souvenir shop.
No.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, so I think it's kind of in the middle for me, where it's like, I think I like a lot of other movies better than it, but I don't think it is a burn it to the ground hate.
What was your favorite of the nominees?
I like The Shape of Water a lot.
Oh man,
And I like any time like a horror director gets any sort of like mainstream, even though he's like the most mainstream of any horror director anyways. But anything that gets, he seems like a pretty earnest weirdo.
Yeah.
And so anything that can happen good for him is nice. And
yeah, I like
keep
that.
Making Pacific Rim movies forever or whatever.
It's Pacific Rim.
Pacific Rim.
A lot of people get that wrong.
It's, and at the end of the movie, they're like, oh, it's the ones where you can dunk and it doesn't break the backboard. Okay, we got to get into the next game because it is way longer. If you liked the last game, but you were like, I'm sad it ended, you know, everyone.
Well, who won the last? Did Todd win?
The first game is the warm-up. We don't keep score.
Okay.
I'd like to say if we were keeping score, I gathered at least like 3 half points. So
yeah, you did.
They add up.
So
game of inches. But yeah, just like football.
The first game, we don't keep score because it's kind of a warm-up. And kind of we got to cool down with the second game, so we're not doing a score thing with it.
That's fair.
And those are the two games. The second game is, I'm going to read you some trivia for a movie that won Best Picture, and you have to tell me what movie that is. Okay. We have one from the 80s, one from the 90s, and one from the aughts.
Yeah, people call it the aughts.
Yeah, I don't like that.
I'm going to be good at
Pitchfork
this.
Or on the Owl.
And we're going to start with the 80s.
Roadhouse. Sorry.
During filming of the immense coronation scene in the Forbidden City, Queen Elizabeth II was in Beijing on a state visit. The production was given priority over the Queen's visit by authorities, and she was unable to visit the Forbidden City.
Roadhouse?
World War Z.
This is from the 80s.
And an Academy Award nominee?
This was the first Western film made in and about the country to be produced with full Chinese government cooperation since 1949. 19,000 extras were needed over the course of this.
Sounds
film.
A lot like Lawrence of Arabia or Spartacus, but those are not.
No, I hadn't even heard of this movie when I looked it up.
Okay.
How many words are in the title?
Three, if you count the.
Okay.
Two.
The English Patient.
No, two. If you only count Last Emperor.
The Roadhouse. Oh, it's the Last Emperor.
Yeah.
Oh man.
What's the Last Emperor?
I don't know.
No
one
ever
heard
of
that movie.
That's isn't that what's his face? That's Christian Bale's first movie.
What?
That's a Spielberg.
That was not
movie.
In the trivia.
No, that's
Emperor of the Sun. Yeah. Oh my God, you're right.
So now
that was a mashup.
To go against it now, I've looked up the worst reviewed movie from 1987, and I'm going to
Tango and Cash.
I'm going to read you the trivia from it, and you got to guess what the worst reviewed movie is, and I think we have a better chance. The tagline for this movie was "They're back," and it was not the animated dinosaur movie "We're Back."
Gremlins 2?
No,
I was going to. Yeah, that's exactly.
No, another stakeout.
MTV ran a promotion called the MTV Body Snatchers involving the Beastie Boys, where the grand prize was to be an extra in this movie.
Critters 2.
Poltergeist 2.
Three actors in this film went on to have prominent roles in The West Wing.
Oh my goodness. This is the worst reviewed movie of 1987?
Yes. One character in this movie pees for 1 minute and 46 seconds straight.
I know what it is. It's the movie with the dad from Home Alone and there's guys living in the sewers.
I don't know what that is.
The Burbs?
It's not The Burbs.
Pass. Keep going.
That's the last trivia.
Is it, we said it isn't Tango and Cash, right? Tango and Cash should have won Best Picture that year.
Here's how many words are in it. 1, 2, 3, 4, then the number 2, 5, 6, 7.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, Secret of the Ooze, that's 1993.
That's the only reason any of us hadn't guessed it is because we all knew it was 1993.
It's actually 91, I think, too.
Imagine the people who quit listening because you got the year of that movie wrong. That's the audience I'm looking for.
Yeah,
it's the guy who gave up when you got the second
they
Ninja Turtles
They quit listening because they're watching it
His
now.
His finger is hovering over the button.
It's already in the Blu-ray player.
What is this movie?
And it's We're Back or They're Back?
They're Back.
It's not Critters 2. It's not Gremlins 2.
It is a sequel to a movie.
Pumpkinhead 2.
It's not a horror movie.
Not a horror movie.
Not a horror
what?
Movie? Oh, a Problem Child 2?
No. You want the answer?
It's like 7 words.
There's no way Problem Child 2 had bad reviews.
Revenge of the Nerds 2. Nerds in Paradise.
Nerds in Paradise.
I will absolutely agree with those reviews then. That is a bad movie.
That's really bad.
All right.
I believe Booger was the protagonist of that one.
Here's our 90s Best Picture winner. Although the score was arranged by Lenny Niehaus, the main theme was written by the director himself.
Jurassic Park.
That should have won Best Picture, but no.
Should have.
It took the director several years to actually get around to reading the script, as his script reader told him it wasn't worth making. Three of the main actors in this movie were born in 1930.
Oh.
Body count is 9 for the film.
The body count is 9?
Yeah, and that's the thing they listed in the trivia.
That's a lot for a Best Picture winner.
The film takes place from 1880 to 1881.
Okay.
Dances with Wolves.
No. I don't even know when that takes place. That's actually not that bad of a guess.
It's also a great movie. Oh, boy.
A River Runs Through It.
No.
River Wild.
This has...
River
no,
Phoenix.
No. No, now
Legends of the Fall.
You're doing a word thing now.
Legends of the Fall is a good movie.
This is the least politically correct piece of trivia, but is so funny to me that the director of this movie said he would never win an Oscar in his life because, quote, I am not a Jew.
Is
Braveheart?
That...
No, but that's, that's... You got the connection all right. Born in 1930. Three of the stars were born in 1930. Do you want to know the stars? Yeah. One is Sir Richard Harris. One is Gene Hackman, and the other one is also the director.
What? And it's not the Gremlins too? Not Mel Gibson or Kevin Costner. What other actors directed Best Picture movies?
Born in 1930?
Is it like Reds? That's like an 80s movie.
The director's Clint Eastwood.
Oh, boy. This is, what's it called? Clint, what was his first one? Unforgiven.
Unforgiven.
Yeah, it's like one of our favorite movies.
Gene Hackman, yep.
No.
Classic.
Yeah, that's what he said about it before he won the Oscar, was he'll never win an Oscar because it said, quote, I am not a Jew, I make too much money.
We all should have known Clint's leanings earlier on in the career.
To be fair, he was saying it to an empty chair, so it's crazy.
Yeah. It's totally fine. It's not racist. It's totally fine.
Now for the worst reviewed movie of 1992, which is the year Unforgiven came out. Jim Carrey
Under Siege.
Jim Carrey and Nicolas Cage were both considered for the title role before the actual person was cast.
I did already say Under Siege, but...
Film debut of Rose McGowan.
Oh, Scream. Mm-mm. Jawbreaker.
In the scene where the main character is eating out of a dog bowl, he's actually eating Cookie Crisp.
Lethal Weapon 3.
A popular breakfast cereal.
Lethal Weapon 3?
No.
What other movies have characters eating out of dog bowls?
And it's
Clifford?
It's known as California Man in Europe.
Demolition Man?
Encino Man?
Encino Man.
Oh, wow. That's
Nicolas
the worst reviewed movie from what year?
1992.
It doesn't live up. We rewatched that recently.
It's rough.
It's not on the same scale as
There's only 6 months
Son-in-Law.
Of everyone's life where that is a good movie.
Yeah.
It is like when you are 18 and 4 months old.
Man, Pauly Shore, though, man. That star burned bright for
another,
a small amount
another
of
Another trivia about that movie was Pauly Shore went out for the role of the Encino Man.
Of Link?
Of Link. And didn't get it, but they thought he was so funny, they made the role for him. And so he's not in the script. They didn't even rewrite the script. They just put him in scenes and let him riff.
That's outstanding.
Yeah.
Pauly Shore still going around doing stand-up.
He is.
Yeah, he sold out our club.
Really?
Yeah, for a weekend.
What club? What's your club in Austin?
Cap City Comedy Club.
Very cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a great club.
Do you ever, what's with the guy that we saw on tour who bombed?
Neil Hamburger?
No, he like bombs on purpose. No, Ronnie Velveeta. Do you ever do stuff with Ronnie Velveeta?
No, I've never seen Ronnie Velveeta.
Oh, dude.
There's also a room in Austin called the Velveeta Room.
There sure is. Probably, let me tell you what goes down in the Velveeta Room. Ronnie Velveeta bombs. It's pretty great.
Is his act cheesy?
Or
cheesy substituting?
It's more of a cheesy substitute in my experience.
What's it, Ronnie Velveeta?
Yeah.
I'll keep an eye out for him.
Pretty good.
All right. So here's our odds. This is the Best Picture winner from the odds.
Okay, this is my best shot.
The lead role was offered to Hugh Jackman, but he declined because he felt he was too young for the role. And he's later admitted that he regretted declining the role.
I've read this trivia before.
In 2005, the movie was named as one of the 20 most overrated movies of all time.
Crash.
No.
Ooh.
That came out in 2006.
That's a good guess.
Okay. That was a good one.
But that came out too late. This was Miramax's highest grossing film of all time when it finished its run.
That's every Miramax Best Picture winner.
Yeah. The director originally wanted Keanu Reeves for the male lead, which blew me away. One of the few Best Picture winners to not win either Best Screenplay or Best Director.
Probably a Scorsese movie.
The film marks the second time Richard Gere has played a smarmy, fame-hungry attorney based in Chicago, Illinois.
Primal Fear.
The first was Primal Fear in 1996. That's the next line of the trivia. It is. That's the next line.
Wait, but Richard Gere, isn't it?
Smarmy lawyer?
Mm-hmm.
Played by Richard Gere.
This film marks the second time Richard Gere has played a smarmy, fame-hungry attorney based in Chicago, Illinois.
Is the movie Chicago?
Yeah.
That shouldn't count. That doesn't count.
I didn't see it. It doesn't count.
Yeah.
Oh, never mind.
Wait, what?
Who's the main character that Hugh Jackman was going to be?
The Richard Gere. Richard Gere. Wait, also, who's the director? Wasn't it...
It's not Baz Luhrmann.
I thought it was
Baz Luhrmann. It was that guy. No, it's some other dude, and this is his first movie.
Well done.
Yeah. All right, and here's the worst reviewed movie of 2002. Wait. Which is, of all of six of these movies from the trivia thing, this is the only one I have seen more than once. This is the only one I've watched twice.
Wait, what was the last one?
Chicago.
Oh, wait. Okay.
This is crazy. This is the most common IMDb trivia. Nicolas Cage was offered the lead role.
he gets around,
but
man.
He turned it down to do The Family Man.
That's a good choice.
Because yeah. we know it's 2002, the year yeah. Chicago came out. Yeah. One of the leads admitted in a guest appearance on Late Night with Conan O'Brien that the film sucked balls, but that it was his duty to promote it. The film takes place in 2005, the future. A lead actress only accepted her part in the film once they agreed to remove a nude scene.
Southland Tales.
I know what it is.
And what is it?
Can we stop? Batman and Robin.
No. And what year do you think years are?
Yeah, that's like
1998. There are too many. Like that.
I know what it is. The one where the train comes at the screen and everyone ran out of the theater. The lead actress in the film only accepted a part once they agreed to remove a nude scene and provided her with her requested deep facial scar.
What?
Originally scored by Brian Transo was also removed because it sounded. The original score was removed because it sounded too Arabic and was replaced with a new score by Eric Serra.
That was less Arabic?
Yes. Also, some of the other music was changed or removed from the cut of the film. And then here's the last one.
Freddy Got Fingered.
No. Although the first draft of the script was considered by many to be very good and even superior to the film, the director didn't like it because it focused more on social commentary while he thought the audience would really like to see more of the action scenes. The titular action scenes.
Oh, Freddy Got Fingered.
Prince of Persia starring Jake Gyllenhaal.
No,
it's a
ooh, that's a good one, though.
Uwe Boll movie.
This is why he had the original script be completely rewritten several times and made sure it focuses more on WWF-like showmanship, including crazy costumes and stuff.
This movie sounds awesome.
Wait, yeah, it does sound really awesome.
Is this... No. That's
Resident Evil?
No.
Underworld?
What's the year again?
2002. Keanu Reeves was supposed to be the main role.
Who was the main role?
Yeah, who ended up being the main role?
Some dude who looks just like Keanu Reeves, but I can't remember his name.
But it wouldn't have been totally different if it was Keanu Reeves, right?
No. Okay. The guy, the lead who admitted in the guest appearance that the movie sucked was, who's that? He's a rapper.
Busta Rhymes.
Mama Said Knock You Out.
Oh, LL Cool J.
Wait, is this the shark movie?
Deep Blue Sea?
No.
LL Cool J.
Oh, SWAT.
No.
Those are the two LL Cool J movies.
Do you want to know the sport they play in the movie?
Shaft. Is it Shaft?
In the movie, they play a sport called Rollerball.
Rollerball.
I forgot about that movie. Yeah.
Wait, wasn't that was that Rennie Harlan, the director?
The director's name is John McTiernan.
Oh, McTiernan. He went to jail. Yeah, that's a classic.
Director Die Hard.
Classic McTiernan.
Lots of comedians went to Harvard. This guy is from jail.
He's from jail. No, but everybody's listening. Do some John McTiernan Wikipedia reading. He kind of got a raw deal on that Pelicano case. It's a good Vanity Fair article.
Okay, we'll let everyone look into that on the podcast.
Turn off the podcast. Google John McTiernan, Anthony Pelicano case. Clear out your weekend.
Yeah, just check it out.
Put on a pot of coffee. Right, rollerball.
Opposite order.
Yeah.
All right, so we're here at the end. We're going to wrap up with the... What movie is Kyle's dad describing having only seen the trailer and never having even heard of the movie?
This is exciting.
And this was once a Best Picture winner.
Really?
And so if you think you know, just raise your hand and hold it for the end.
Okay, so there's a guy and he's walking by the sun. I guess maybe the beach. Maybe he is a spy. It seems like she fell in love with someone that nobody else likes. An airplane, a piano, some rain, and he's coming back for her.
Oh, it's incredible how much you could argue that was the Dunkirk trailer.
That was very soothing also.
Is that Castaway?
It is not Castaway.
Is that Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind?
It is not. A Best Picture winner.
The Pianist.
Is it Cold Mountain?
No. It is so generic now that I hear it.
It's not The Pianist?
No.
It's Life is Beautiful?
No.
Is the beach a big part of the thing? Of the
He's wrong in calling it the beach when he says
oh, okay.
Dunkirk. English Patient.
It is The English Patient.
Oh. Yeah, I just put that together with the coming back to her.
Yeah. I've never seen it.
Really?
Really.
It's a really good movie.
It is.
Surprisingly. Like, it's not... Just you think it's like a movie your parents like that you wouldn't like, but it's actually a good movie.
Like the majority of the films that we've discussed, I've
not seen. I don't think any movie is a movie my parents have seen that I haven't seen. So I don't know if I'm a good example.
I remember both Heat and The English Patient were movies that my parents both came home and when they saw and said, oh, you know, it was a little slow. And I was like, okay, I got to get to the bottom of this. And then I snuck up, stayed up late and watched them on HBO. And I was like, Mom and Dad, you guys are fucking idiots.
Yes.
These movies are awesome.
We all remember when we were a kid trying to hide from our parents so we could watch late night HBO shows of The English Patient.
You got it, man, dude.
That's why I haven't found it on HBO Go. It's in the After Dark section. Well, thank you guys for coming and doing the show.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having
us. Walker, Todd Sklar, Alex Rennie. Thanks, guys.
And then do we do another one when people have gone back and read about the John McTiernan thing?
Yeah.
The recap?
So, what did you guys think?
Thank you guys so much. If you're listening, we are going to be taking some user-submitted scripts and doing episodes with scripts that have been sent in. We've got a bunch of them already. They are incredible. If you want to write your own for any movie, any TV show, you can send it into neverseenitshow@gmail.com.
Are we allowed to submit?
Send us a, you can, yeah, sure. You can send me the Dunkirk script in a little bit.
yes.
So send me something, neverseenitshow@gmail.com, and you can subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts and leave reviews and stuff. We appreciate it. It helps out the show. And thank you guys so much.
Inception! That was awesome.
It's a good show.